Good morning and welcome to our podcast, which is episode 81 of our Employment Bulletin, the written version of which went out last week and is available on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, as are all episodes of our Employment Law Bulletin. I'm joined again today by my colleague Lee Garbutt from the employment team here at Sintons. Podcast today will last approximately 10 or so minutes. So Lee, good morning and over to you.
Morning, David. Thank you. In this podcast, I will be going over recent case law updates and recent guidance changes. Moving on to the first case law of Ali versus Heathrow Express and Redline Assured Security Limited. This involved harassment and whether the intention can be perceived to be reasonable. The claimant in this case, Mr. Anis Ali, worked as a security guard for Heathrow Airport, who was the first respondent. There was also a second respondent, Redline Assured Security Limited, who was responsible for security checks at the airport, which involved creating and leaving suspicious objects to test the security officers to see if any improvements could be made and any identified weaknesses from the security checks. These tests would allow analysis to show whereabouts improvements needed to be made and again, identifying those weaknesses. In one instance, which involved this case, a test was carried out containing a bag which had a box with some electric cabling and a visible piece of paper, which notably had the words Allahu Akbar written in Arabic. Mr. Ali, who was a Muslim, received an email from the first respondent outlining the test, which was circulated around employees of the first respondent. He claimed that this associated Muslims with terrorism and therefore amounted to direct discrimination and harassment. With regards to harassment, under Section 26 of the Equality Act 2010, harassment occurs when an individual engages in unwanted conduct relating to a protected characteristics, in this case, in relation to religion or belief, towards another individual. That conduct has the purpose or effect of violating that person's dignity or creating an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating, or offensive environment for that individual. When this reached the Employment Tribunal, the Employment Tribunal decided that the conduct by the second respondent amounted to neither direct discrimination nor harassment. Just taking the element of harassment, weighing up all the circumstances, the Employment Tribunal held it was not reasonable for Mr. Ali to perceive the conduct as having the effect required under Section 26 of the Equality Act. They stated that Mr. Ali should have understood that the second respondent was not seeking to associate Islam with terrorism. In this case, the item was used in the context of recent incidences in which the phrase had been used by terrorists. Ultimately, the second respondent was producing the item in relation to possible threats that could be against the airport. Ultimately, Mr. Ali appealed the decision by the Employment Tribunal in relation to the harassment claim, stating that this was either perverse or insufficiently reasoned. The Employment Appeal Tribunal dismissed both grounds of appeal. They held that Mr. Ali's perception was just one of the matters for the Employment Tribunal to consider when looking at whether the conduct amounted to harassment under the Equality Act 2010. The Employment Appeal Tribunal held that the conduct related to religion rather than being on the grounds of or because of Mr. Ali's religion. Mr. Ali should have appreciated or reasonably appreciated its purpose and intention. From this case, the points to note are that the decision highlights the importance of context when it comes to concluding the perceived effect of conduct on an individual or whether this is reasonable. In this case, the conduct was found not to have been directed at the claimant because of his religion, and it was held that he should have appreciated the reason for it. Moving on to recent legislation and guidance updates from the government, the final piece of concluding guidance, if you like, around COVID-19, which affected workplace assessments, has now come into force from April 2022. Specifically from the 1st of April 2022, the health and safety requirement, which required employers to explicitly consider COVID-19 in its risk assessments, has now been removed. Subsequently, the government has now put the onus on employers to take responsibility and essentially to have autonomy to make assessments based on their particular requirements and circumstances. Ultimately, the working safely during coronavirus legislation has now been replaced with new guidance, which is reducing the spread of respiratory infections, including COVID-19, in the workplace. This guidance specifically includes symptoms for employers to look out for, what to do if a member of staff has symptoms of a respiratory infection, which includes COVID-19, actions to reduce the spread of respiratory infections, again, including COVID-19, and management of members of staff who are at risk of serious illness from COVID-19. Although the government has now removed the requirement to explicitly consider COVID-19, it should be worth noting that employers will still need to consider their statutory and common law health and safety duties, albeit this guidance has now been removed. Moving on to another recent case law update, which involved failing to provide a contract of employment, which subsequently increased compensation awards. The case of Rimmel v. BSS Associates Limited involved Mr. Rimmel, who was employed by the respondent, BSS Associates, as a senior accountant for 5 years, from 2016 until June 2021. This essentially involved Mr. Rimmel receiving his P45 with no reasoning whatsoever from BSS Associates, which confirmed his employment would be ending in June 2021. As the P45 did not include any reasonings, Mr. Rimmel contacted his employer to ascertain the reasons why his employment was ending, which was met with unhelpful responses from BSS, who did not clarify the reason for the dismissals. Subsequently, Mr. Rimmel, upon receiving no information around the dismissal, decided to bring a claim for unfair dismissal, the wages owed to him for June, which he did not receive, and holiday pay and notice pay. In this case, the Employment Tribunal noted that Mr. Rimmel was dismissed by BSS without any disciplinary process, and that BSS failed to follow the ACAS Code of Practice on Disciplinary and Grievance Procedures. Specifically in this case, the Employment Tribunal held that BSS had failed to make any attempt to comply with any legal requirements when dismissing Mr. Rimmel. Furthermore, the Employment Tribunal found that BSS had not provided Mr. Rimmel with a written statement of employment particulars, either at the start or during his employment. Subsequently, because Mr. Rimmel did not receive a written statement of particulars, the Employment Tribunal decided to increase the award for this failure from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, essentially because they felt it was just and equitable to do so. The reason why the Employment Tribunal decided to do this was because, in their opinion, BSS were used to dealing with legal rules within their business and should have paid more attention to the employment law rules applicable within their business. The starting point for an award where there has been a specific failure to provide a written statement of particulars of employment is a minimum of 2 weeks' pay. But as mentioned, in this case, because the failure was to an extent with Mr. Rimmel, the Employment Tribunal decided to increase this because it was just and equitable to do so to 4 weeks. Together with all the other claims that Mr. Rimmel brought against his former employer, BSS, the Employment Tribunal awarded damages of £36,664.76. The points to note in this case is that this is just a first instance decision and therefore not binding. However, it clearly is a report and reminder that the Employment Tribunal will take into account the types of business and organisation of a respondent when considering whether to increase awards because it is just an equitable to do so. As mentioned in this case, because BSS were used to dealing with legal requirements, which was a fact that they took into account, ultimately this led to increased damages being awarded against it for failure to provide written particulars of employment. That concludes the podcast for the recent updates, and I'll hand back across to David.
Thanks very much, Lee. Very quickly for me, we continue to release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And as I said at the outset, that includes all episodes of the Bulletin and all episodes of our monthly employment live Q&A session, which if you haven't checked out, suggest that you do, last working Friday of each month, 10 o'clock on Teams. You can also follow the employment team on Twitter at SintonsHR. So if you'd like to discuss anything Lee's raised today, please don't hesitate to get in touch with him or a member of the team. Lee can be contacted via telephone 019-1226-7878 or via email lee.garbutt@sintons.co.uk. Thank you once again for listening. We'll be back with you next month. We hope you've enjoyed this update and we'll speak to you soon. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you.